This episode of For Azeroth is brought to you by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/faz. This week, we wanted to thank Arden N for increasing their weekly pledge. Faz will always be free, but if you enjoy the content we produce, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/faz. Welcome to For Azeroth, the podcast all about World of Warcraft. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host, Manny. Manny, how has Azeroth been treating you?
Hello, Joss. Man, Azeroth has been pretty good this week. I have been spending a lot of time trying to do various mount hunting in like the time in between, but I've also been spending a lot of time trying to do Torghast. That, where before we were pretty down on Torghast, Joss, you and I both were not happy with its direction.
Yeah, but, and I should say I haven't been back in since you and I played, so I don't know like what's changed. I watched you stream a little bit of it, which was kind of funny. But so basically, guys, if you haven't seen it, Manny has been streaming. You guys should totally go and check it out in case you don't stick around for the whole end of the show. He's been talking about it quite a lot, but you were streaming Torghast the other night, and I guess one of the, they're called like torments, is basically like debuffs, right? Things that Torghast will do to you to hinder your progress. One of them, I guess, was like a movement slowing thing.
Oh, it was worse than that. Yeah. So I got confused between the torments and the oppressive auras. And the oppressive auras was what slows you down.
Okay.
Yeah. But then I spent like 2 minutes being like, man, this sucks. I'm so slow. I feel like I'm RP walking, only for you to show up in channel and be like, are you RP walking? And then for me to press the button and realize, yes, I was RP walking for 2 minutes trying to move around.
But the better part of that, guys, is he submitted a bug report.
Oh, yeah. It was just like, this is ridiculous. Yeah, even when I use Ghost Wolf.
Why am I so slow? Oh god, guys, this is good. It was really funny. So for moments like that, make sure you go to twitch.tv/truevillainmanny and follow the stream so you don't miss a moment.
I'll be better. But yeah, I'm doing that. So for people who are going to try and tune in, that's Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific, where I will be streaming just different things, sometimes on the alpha, sometimes on live. But that's the other part. On live, I've been trying to level up my priest because I really wanted to get a clothy leveled up.
Ah, okay. So why did you choose priest over, I guess, what, mage and warlock?
Yeah, mage and warlock. Warlock pretty much went out because I'm not a fan of pet classes. Still not something that I like dealing with. So I'm really sorry, Unholy Death Knights. I'm really sorry, Hunters that don't have Lone Wolf. I'm really sorry, Frost Mages that don't have Lonely Winter. It's just not something I want to do. So it was between Mage and it was between Priest. And I decided that having the ability to be a healer would be nice. So I could take the Priest and just be doing dungeons and that pretty quickly for when I want to like actually have the priest going.
As long as you're playing discipline and not holy, because Manny, I can't have you beat me again. Like, just let me have something in WoW that I'm good at, okay?
it's not a competition, Joss.
Everything is a competition, Manny. Everything.
Oh, that's peak Joss. I'm having peak Joss moments here today. Everything's a competition. But yeah, discipline is what I went with. I decided that it would be cool to like be able to do damage and heal at the same time. I have already leveled a discipline priest up to like 110 on a different server, but didn't want to bring it over to our new server and said I would start from the beginning. Also, try and get some of that heritage armor off of the allied races was definitely a factor in leveling up a new character.
Okay, because I was going to say, have you used your boost? Because I'm still sitting on my boost from my Shadowlands pre-order.
Yes, I used my boost on a warrior. So I have a Torn warrior.
Mr. I don't play alts seems to have a lot of alt characters, you guys.
Oh, It's part of a plan. I have four characters that I'm going to have active in Shadowlands for a very specific reason of being able to do all the covenants.
Okay.
And then the secondary reason is that I want to have access to a bunch of professions. And so eight different professions will allow me to build up the alt army and do more stuff with the auction house in Shadowlands.
How many professions are there total, not counting the four that everybody gets?
What's the four that everybody gets?
Well, like, I guess first aid's gone now. Sorry. So cooking and archaeology and fishing. Poor first aid. So other than those ones that everybody gets, like it's primary and secondary professions. And then what are the other ones called? Anyways, so it doesn't matter.
Secondary are the three that you just mentioned, fishing, and that. So for the primary professions, you have the gathering ones, right? So that is herbalism, that is
mining and skinning, right?
And those feed into the crafting professions. So that's leatherworking, that's alchemy, that's blacksmithing, that's jewel crafting. And what else
tailoring.
We got? Inscription and tailoring. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then you should basically be able to kind of cover all your bases with eight profession slots.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have three gathering plus five crafting ones. And I would leave me with one profession that I'm going to not be able to touch.
Which, I mean, it kind of begs the question, why leatherworking? Do leather workers make anything of substance? Like, is skinning, because skinning's only good for leatherworking, right? As opposed to mining, which is good for, like, blacksmithing and jewel crafting, herbalism that's good for inscription and alchemy, like, that have multiple applications. Like, leatherworking doesn't. Skinning doesn't.
So skinning obviously is the only thing that feeds into leatherworking.
Yeah.
Leatherworking in current, the best thing that it's really offering is drums. So when people are doing Mythic Plus and they don't bring the bloodlust themselves, like that's I'd say is the main thing that leatherworking is doing. But as we're seeing in Shadowlands with the ability for different professions to give things to other professions, that interweaving means that the professions should be closer to each other. We're seeing like the optional stuff that you can take from other professions. We're also seeing that the Torghast legendaries, you might need to grab a base piece of armor from a profession and then use what you get out of Torghast to create the legendary that you want.
Then if you're a leather wearer, or I think leather working, you can make mail pieces too, right?
Yeah, leather working does two types. So it is for leather and it is for mail.
So that actually might not be a terrible one to have in Shadowlands if you're going to be able to essentially scoosh two markets into one profession. Mm-hmm. Assuming you don't have a full alt army and are ready to take over the auction house like Manny. If you're making actual profession choices, then skinning and leatherworking are not the, because I know I had skinning and leatherworking on my hunter for the longest time, and then I was like, why?
when were you max level trying to work on the auction house with skinning and leatherworking?
Well, I wasn't trying to work the auction house. I was just like, those were the professions that I chose on my hunter when I like first started professions in the game, because I was like, this makes sense. She's a hunter. She hunts things and then skins them. that was literally the extent of my thought process.
That was how I started with my first character. It's like, okay, well, this is a shaman and he like is in tune with the world and doesn't want to waste things and he's a tauren and he's nature. So yeah, I did skinning and I did leather working. And so when the big culture shock for me was when I tried to do a different profession and I'm like, wait, you can't put like scraps of iron together to make a better scrap, which was like the thing in skinning. So like, I'm right there with you, Joss. That's what I started out with as well.
But yeah, it just seemed like any of the armor pieces that I was making. So I guess when I finally stopped leather working, it would have been in like Draenor. Yeah, it would have been Draenor is when I finally gave it up. And I basically was just like, I don't understand, because everything that I'm making with this, I can just get better stuff by playing the game. And I wasn't even doing raiding at that point. I was just like, why would I wear this when stuff from quests is better? So I dropped it for things that were a little bit more helpful. And I haven't really ever looked back. I mean, my characters are doing like inscriptions and enchanting, and which I guess enchanting can go well with one of the crafting armor professions. But I was just like, I don't understand why am I leather working? Nobody wants this stuff. But I had forgotten about drums because as a hunter, I just stuffed the core hound, right? And yeah. Even then they've changed it now. So you're one of three and one of them is a bloodlust. So yeah, their pets aren't as specific as they used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. But they used to be far more effective back when you did like armor kits, and the leg enchant was always through leatherworking at one point. So everybody used that from leatherworking. So there were points where professions were stronger, and yes, they have weakened them. Hopefully in Shadowlands, it gets a lot better. And I'm trying to be in a position where I can capitalize on that. I haven't thought of all the different professions, but that was the reason. And of course, the last reason that I actually have the four different alts is that gives me the ability to have four different armor types, because now I've said that I have a clothy, I have a plate wearer, I have my demon hunter who is leather wearer, and my shaman who is male. So now I can go around and collect every transmog that I want once I have these guys together. And that's why I have the alts that I have.
Nice. We should mention with all this Shadowlands talk that there was supposed to be a Shadowlands live stream coming this week, but unfortunately that has been postponed, so we won't hear any Shadowlands news. And Manny, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that there's been a rescheduled date yet.
Not at this time. They said that they would have details in the future, but they wanted to give voice to more important matters, and so they've postpone this indefinitely until we know when it goes next time,
which absolutely makes sense. So again, if you guys were looking for the live stream June 9th, that has been postponed, which kind of brings us into the news now. So we had a short story released last week, and it's called A Moment in Verse. It was released on the World of Warcraft site, so anybody can go and read it right now. It's free. And it's definitely a lot lighter than some of the stuff that we saw through BFA. It features two of my favorite characters. I really, really, really enjoy Lothamar. I've always liked stories that feature him, and I wish that they kind of did more with that character in the game. Now, they've brought him more to the forefront through BFA, which is awesome. But I really like him. In particular, I like the whole leadership being thrust upon him and him not wanting to bear the mantle of power sort of idea. I find him to be quite an interesting character. So I'm glad that he's in the forefront. And he's in the forefront with someone we saw a lot of in Legion, First Arcanist Thalistra. So I'm going to be 100% honest with you guys. I did not read this the whole way through. So basically, it's about a poetry battle that the two of them are going to be going into. And that's about as far as I got in the story, because I was just like, poetry, that's lame. So I basically got as far as I think it was like the second or third page of it or something. Basically, when the two of them get up to the room with all of the scholars, and they start talking about poetry. And I think there was actually at that point in time, one of the two of them, whether it was Lothamar or Thalissa, I can't remember. Like, you know, when they do like poetries or songs in books and it's like the smaller paragraphs. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, nah, I'm out. So yeah, that's about as far as I got. But Manny has filled me in, and I am going to go back and read the full story because, guys, they're a thing. They're a ship. They're a couple, and I love it.
Yeah. The poetry is just a subtext.
Yeah.
Both in the way that the story is written and the way that the poetry is used within the story. I think that, yeah, as you said, it's light, it's uplifting, it's a fun little thing. We all need a laugh or a moment of levity, and I suggest that if you're looking for that, go ahead and read this. We also had a link where the voice actor for Lorthamar actually recites the poem from this short story, and I thought that was really cool.
I love that you loved it, because I I got about 30 seconds into the clip and then I was like, I'm bored. Poetry's dumb. It's really cool that he did this, but I'm out.
But the prose and what it was about.
No. I am not very cultured, you guys. I'm sorry. But yeah, so you should go and read the short story, because apparently it's not all about poetry. There's some adorableness. And I mean, like, the one thing that I think I liked the most about this was just kind of seeing a little bit more of a romantic story being told in Warcraft, just because I feel like previously we had, like, the one that really pops out into my head is kind of the love triangle between Arthas, Jaina, and Kael'thas, right? And that was kind of a, like, unrequited, bordering on a little bit of an obsession from Kael'thas towards Jaina. And then Jaina obviously pursuing Arthas as he went down this, like, super dark path. And it just wasn't the healthiest of relationships to be portrayed. And then we've got Jaina again with Caligos. And even that was not really the best relationship, because she was not in the greatest place post Theramore. So, like, that relationship dynamic wasn't great. But now they're telling a story about, first of all, two elves who are, you know, extremely long lived, if not, you know, actually immortal anymore. So I always think stories like that hold a really interesting dynamic, because they've lived so much that trying to put two lives together with, like, I mean, Thalissa's been alive for like 10,000 years. That's a lot of history. So, like, just the when they, like, finally decide on a person to be with, I just think it's really interesting in any sort of, like, immortal being kind of sense. I think those are really interesting romance stories. And then, like, again, with Lothamar and his, like, backstory of, you know, not wanting power but wanting to do the best for his people, like, he's very noble in and honorable, like, not in the royalty sense, but in the personality trait sense. So to kind of see that contrast and see him, like, take a little bit of time for himself was really nice. So I don't know, I'm kind of stoked for them to explore more romantic stories in this kind of a context that isn't like someone's in a dark place, if that makes sense. Like, they're both just kind of happy right now.
Yeah, and I like this because it is a supplementary story that you could kind of glean from their interplay in 8.2.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, this, like, just adds to it, adds more flavor. Obviously, the poem stuff, or, like, the you have to come to Silvermoon, was something that they have talked about in-game. Mm-hmm. So this really fits in well. And this is actually the first Warcraft writing that I've seen from Madeline Rowe. She is the person who is doing the novel that is going to be the precursor to Shadowlands.
Oh, okay.
So being able to actually like read her writing and see if it's worth the plunge to like buy up the book, that this is a good good taste of like what's to come.
Which, I mean, that's really good to know, because I hadn't realized that the post author, like the short story author and the book author, were going to be the same, because that was one thing that kind of hit me right off the bat, was how well the writer seemed to write Lothamar and understand his character and kind of his motivations, where he was coming from and stuff. So that's good. I hope it's a little bit, I mean, okay, you guys know that I have not liked the last two Warcraft books. So, I mean, it's not really too out there for me to say I hope it's better, because I disliked, I didn't really like the Illidan story. I thought it was kind of meh. And then I really didn't like the Before the Storm story that we got before BFA. So I'm going to say I hope it's better. and I have a lot of hope after reading even just the parts that I did of this short story. And like I said, I'm going to go back and read the whole thing. But yeah, it does give me hope, because like I say, this author seems to really understand where her characters are coming from, which is nice to see.
Oh yeah, she's got like four blood elves apparently, so she spent some time.
She understands Silvermoon.
She understands Silvermoon, maybe a little bit of the culture, though. She was a bit puzzled. She's like, wait, they have a place in the city called Murdero? That doesn't seem right.
And then I'm trying to remember, because I mean, I know I'm just talking about romantic relationships in WoW. Are the romantic relationships in WoW that we've had, are they all basically centered around Jaina? I guess we kind of have Sylvanas and Nathanos, though that part of their relationship is largely hid unless you played the loyalist quest line all the way to the very end and you got like the extra scenes after the Orgrimmar incident, we'll call it, after Sylvanas fled. But other than that, I mean, they've kind of kept that out of the public eye, I guess, is the best way I can think to put it.
I think the most in your face relationship was really off game, which was Agra and Thrall. Just before Cataclysm, they introduced Agra in the novel and everything, and then at the end of Cataclysm, they're having a baby, and you're like, wait, who are you? Where'd you come from? You're what? You're right. Pregnant?
I remember, yeah, he did his whole, there was that whole marriage quest line you could go through in Hyjal, right?
Yeah, Mount Hyjal, yep.
Yep.
Where his personality gets split or something.
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember now. I just remember it kind of ending and then having a whole bunch of people together, which was kind of a big deal, apparently, at that point in WoW time.
Yeah, it was like a wedding.
It was a wedding, right? But I mean, like, there was Alliance and Horde were both there, because Jaina was there, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like that was a big deal at the time, though I can't remember why. I guess they were still kind of on uneasy peace terms in Kata.
Yeah, that was pre-mana bomb. Yeah,
pre-mana bomb. Exactly. There haven't been very many in your face relationships, and not that they like, and actually most of them, like now that we're sitting and talking about it, it's very much in the supplementary material, in the books, in the like, I guess, short stories now too. So I wonder if this is something that we're going to see more of. Cause like you said, it was hinted at in the game. Do we have anything on the Alliance side really?
Quasi the goblin and gnome pair.
Yeah.
That's again,
so.
Before the Storm, Safranetta and, oh, I forget his name. I can't remember.
Probably something with a couple of Zeds in it.
Yeah. Frazak or whatever.
Krizit. Yeah. I don't know. But
that was in the supplementary material. And then in the, just before we went to Mechagon, there was the, oh, you found their parrot and you get to like find out that they are alive and like hiding out in Tanaris or something like that. So that was quasi in game as well.
And then, but even then, that's a half horde, half alliance.
Okay, so then the strong alliance one, which hasn't really been put made official, is Talia and Anduin.
Oh yeah, that's nothing's been made official there at all. Yeah. That's that I feel like is more still Gen's hopeful like matchmaking skills.
There is an artist who has been putting up stuff on Twitter, which is not Talia. It is, I am forgetting Gen's daughter's name.
Tess.
Tess, yes. There is a Tess Anduin pairing artist who's just been putting stuff up on Twitter. And like, in my mind, I start shipping that because it seems so cool with that art. And I know Christy Gold... had actually seen that and thought it was beautiful too.
Well, yeah, hopefully then that'll be our in. We can get
love triangle. Love triangle.
Oh, love triangle. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing more from them, and I hope I mean this could kind of go one of two ways. Either the two of them will go off and be happily ever after and then we won't see anything more of them, which I think would be a shame because they are two of my favorite Horde characters, or they and their like relationship will kind of like bring the elven factions together, and we'll get some sort of like we'll see like a ton more of them, and we'll actually get a relationship storyline as like front and center.
Yeah, and I think it's a good way of showing these characters when it's not all about like, oh no, here comes Deathwing, and oh, we killed Deathwing, but like right in his shadow is like Deathwing Jr., and we killed Deathwing Jr., and now we have to deal with the next guy. And it's like, okay, what are these guys like when the world isn't ending every 5 minutes?
Yeah, it gives more of an insight into what's going on with their personalities. And again, I really do hope that we see something on the Alliance side as well. Like, I would love to see some kind of Anduin storyline, because we started to kind of get a little bit of that in game with Gen kind of being like, so you're like 18 now, who's your wife gonna be? Can't rule without a queen, wink wink, elbows.
Yeah, and that's also part of the reason I would love it if it was Tess, where he's just like, oh, you got a date, my daughter.
Yeah, that would be a really interesting, especially when like they are not necessarily on the best of terms, because Gen's thinking definitely aligns with Taranda. Oh, I guess Taranda Malfurion is the Alliance side. I totally forgot about them.
Malfurion's not an actual character. You can't ship something without an actual character.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to talk about their relationship as a front and center thing when one of them was asleep forever. And basically abandoned his wife in order to, or actually, I guess they didn't actually get married until Kata, right? They were the other, like they were together, but then he went to bed and didn't wake up for 10,000 years. And then he woke up and she was like, okay, I've been running the country for 10,000 years. Can you just marry me already? I've been waiting literally forever.
Yeah, they're both kind of married to their job. She's a statesman and he's like off in dream world. It's like, so the relationship there has never really been explored. Like, yes, they're together, but perfunctory in a sense. Like, they just have the title of like elf marriage, whatever they call it.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, right? Because they are eternally like devoted to each other, but a lot of that relationship story we've seen play out in the books, in the War of the Ancients, when you know she kind of chose Malfurion over Illidan, and then you know later on in the Wolfheart, I think the book that happens around Kata, where they decide if the Worgen are going to be allowed to join the Alliance or not, they kind of explore a little bit of the relationship there. And yeah, like it just, it's very, I don't know. it's hard because I feel like they've just told us like how in love they are without necessarily like showing us in a lot of ways, other than, you know, when Malfurion is taken, Tyrande's very upset and, you know, runs through Val'Shara, and we get the Tyrande taunts from Xavius or whatever. And it very much becomes a told, not shown storyline for me. So, but again, like I said, they don't really put relationship stories front and center in Warcraft, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't believe I forgot about Tyrande and Malfurion. I am really sorry, Alliance people. I'm really sorry.
No, like, I honestly don't think that's a fault of the Alliance. I think that is a fault of how they did storytelling back then. When you look at the relationships that existed in vanilla Warcraft and pretty much the first half of the expansion cycles, it's always been like, this is the husband and this is his wife and this is why they're separated, or the wife is a widower, or the husband the wife is widowed, or the husband's a widower, and they did love each other, but we're not going to show that, and this is their son. It's never been about the relationship between two equal partners, other than to say that they were together and are off doing other things.
Yeah, I guess so. And even when we come back to Illyria and Trallian, they are another Alliance side couple that, again, we very much see them in the aftermath of a split. Now, their split was more due to the powers they chose to side with, or rather that, I guess, Illyria chose and Trallian didn't necessarily support, because they were obviously both on the side of the light for a while. And we don't see a lot of that actually happen. We don't see any of it happen in game. It was in that audio drama, which was really good. But we see a lot of that play out, like, because we're just kind of told they've been gone for like 1,000 years in their time. But to us, it's been, you know, 20 or whatever, because time passes differently in the void, or insert excuse here.
Yeah, so, in the Twisting Nether, I do think that is a really good relationship that I would love to see explored, that you don't see very often in this type of media. Not like the beginning of a relationship and falling in love, but like even a amicable split, having that explored, where they do have to go their separate ways, where things just can't work between them, and they do have an adult son, and that sort of relationship is something that is in real life but is really reflected in media.
Well, and an adult son that they didn't bring up, right? They abandoned is a harsh word, but I mean, kind of.
They left him behind, he had an entire life without them. And in many ways, he's a stranger. And like, I think that would be a beautiful thing to explore, and them trying to connect with him and the struggles therein. You would almost assume and be completely forgiving if he had abandonment issues,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's something to explore. I know we were talking about couples, but like, just relationships being explored in World of Warcraft would be definitely something I would love to see, both in supplementary material, because I think it's easier to explore it in a book than in the game, but also seeing ramifications in the game as well would be kind of cool.
Well, and they're doing more and more work with voice acting, and more work with like the kind of smaller cinematics, like not necessarily the super big ones, but the ones done with like the in-game models and stuff. And I think just voicing and observing some of those conversations would be, I think, a nice touch. Obviously, probably at the, you know, bottom of the totem pole of importance, but I think a nice touch, because, you know, this is World of Warcraft, not World of Lovecraft, unless you're, you know, 8.3. We also got some more information about one of the covenants in Shadowlands. So Blizzard has posted a preview of Ardenweald and the Nightfae Covenant. Manny, I'm so stoked. This place looks so cool. It's like everything that I want for my hunter. It makes me want to just main my hunter again because it just looks so cool. All of the environments, and not only the environments, but I also really liked a lot of the creature design that was kind of associated with this covenant.
Yeah, the creature design is what really got me. This really feels like a, I guess, the more living of the Shadowland worlds, but not in the case of like life and death, which it is the life and death cycle sort of rebirth and reincarnation zone. But in that there is a ecosystem in this place. There are like
it's
different
populated.
Tribes.
There's yeah, stuff. It's,
yeah, it's populated. It's not all one monolithic, like I'm the leader and these are my like hierarchies of stuff. There's the Spriggans that are on the outskirts. There's like the mortal souls that have their role, and then they choose like the animal forms that they're in, which the animal forms, Joss, I want that as a glyph. Like, give that to me now. That is amazing.
Yeah, because they're so far, and it's kind of interesting, but so far, that's going to be just for Shadowlands, right? Is that while you're in Shadowlands, you're going to have the ability of the Night Fae to change into a animal form. And then once you do that, then there are different things that you can complete, whether they're, you know, quest lines, achievements, whatever, to grant you different forms. So there's kind of like a default base celestial form, and you can change them because one of them is a unicorn and I need that for all my characters. But it's going to go away at the end of Shadowlands, right? So I hope that they do something along the lines of like just something to carry that forward, because for me, as somebody who does really, really like transmog things, that would be such a great reward. That would be something I would grind through and pay a lot of attention to all the way through Shadowlands if it was the kind of thing I'd be able to carry forward. I don't want to only be a unicorn in Shadowlands.
I definitely want those sort of cosmetic things to carry forward.
Yeah.
That's my biggest complaint about the tier 4 essences is that, oh, these are cool looking in that, but as soon as we're out of BFA, nobody's going to see those again.
Yeah.
But Joss, there is a wolf version, and I already have Ghost Wolf, but like the special effects on this wolf are so good, and I want it, Joss. I just want the glyph. I don't even want to wait for Shadowlands to be like over and they're like, okay, we're going to make a glyph. I want it today. I want it today.
I know those feels.
And if they do like, creatures that you can tame that have these effects, that would help for hunters. Like, mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of different ways to make it specific for these things. But what we're trying to tell you with this way off aside is that it is such an involved, beautifully crafted zone that it, I think it's the best zone they have introduced to date. Like, from the three that I've seen and played through, Ardenweald, number one, by like a long shot, and like just the design of it.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned the Spriggan, and I think the thing that I've noticed just looking at the character models and stuff from the zone is that everything is quite different. There aren't, it's not like they just kind of copy pasted all of these different characters. Like the Spriggan look very different than the Tyrion. I'm totally probably butchering these names.
Tyrion, the tree people.
Okay, yeah, yeah. The ones that have like leaves for hair, basically. Yeah. They kind of almost look like owls. Like they're so interesting. And then like the fairies, even the fairies don't necessarily look like, they look very moth-like. Well, mm-hmm. also, you know, combined with like elven influences and, but also, oh, I don't even know. Like I just, they're so interesting. They're not generic, I guess.
Yeah, and this is the zone where we are going to encounter the Drust.
Yes,
but the Drust may not even be from this zone, because they say that the Drust are invading from their realm of Thros. And Joss, I think that this is a hint at we might go to Thros as a new realm in the future patch.
Which is really interesting, because that was one of the big questions, and one thing that I was really hoping for is that, you know, these four covenants that we get to see are essentially four different zones, but they had alluded to, if not outright told us, that there are hundreds of thousands of dimensions of death, or zones of death, or however you want to think of them. And so it was really interesting because I was like, well, are we going to get to see more of those? Like, are we going to venture into these other places in the Shadowlands, or are we going to stay with these kind of, well, I guess five, because the Maw is one of them as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, are we going to stick with those five, or are we going to get to explore more? And I think you're right. I think Thros could definitely be one of the areas we go and explore, especially since we have kind of the basis of that story already. We've been introduced to them. We have a past with them through the storylines in Drusvar. So I think there's definitely been some groundwork laid here, and this could very much be like a new zone in 9.1 or 9.2.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think there's a lot set up in this zone. We already talked about all those different creatures. I am going to warn people, it's maybe really late by the time you hear this, but be careful when you're on Wowhead. They put out a major spoiler that was basically foreshadowed ahead of time, but they put it right in the title and then put spoiler after it, like that absorbs it all. So be careful. Be careful. We're not going to talk about it here.
Yeah, I feel like that's just good advice, period, with the alpha, because the problem is, like, it sucks that you might have to, like, avoid fan sites, but very much while all the data mining is happening, it's kind of like an arms race, right? Like, everybody wants to be the first people to break a story. Everybody wants to find things and uncover secrets and everything else. But that means that, you know, a lot of the information is out there potentially before the expansion even releases. So yeah, always be careful when you're on fan sites, because unfortunately they don't really separate their front page very well in a lot of cases. So yeah, be careful out there. There's spoilers everywhere, but we linked to the official article, which is informative and kind of like a bunch of teasers as opposed to full-on spoilers. So there's also some pictures of some of the armor that you can get, and I guess one of the sets, is it the leather gear, was redone because the community really didn't like it.
I don't remember them showing the leather set before, but I think it was like the mail set.
Oh, maybe it's the mail set. Okay. I was like, I knew there was one set that wasn't done, and mail would make sense because it's the one of the types that is not shown in the official post. But I do remember seeing a new armor set being posted, I think, yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the mail set. Yes. And it looks much better.
Okay. Which is also, again, yet another time when it seems like they are very much listening to player feedback. The only thing is, I mean, I think the cloth set looks awesome, and I would really like my priest to wear this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I hate the antlers. I love the like the wrap around the face, and like the how you can like only see like the eyes, and then, you know, just that whole like hood look, I think is so cool, but I don't want freaking antlers.
I wonder if you could eliminate that. But I think that is the centerpiece of the helm there.
Oh yeah, no, it totally is. It's definitely the helm, but yeah, I don't like it, which sucks. Maybe there will be a more simplistic design in some other color scheme through the zone somewhere. I don't know, but yeah, I just, oh man, those antlers, they bug me. But I tend to not like super big, ridiculous pieces of armor on my character. Most of the time I hide my helm. So it's definitely a personal preference. But yeah, so if you do want a informative, mostly teaser, but not full on spoiler post, do check out the official article. We have linked it in the show notes. And finally, we have a new alpha build. So Manny, what is new that's worth mentioning in this alpha build?
Okay, so The really cool thing, of course, is that Arden Wild is now available for people to test. We have all classes now available for testing on Torghast, with a lot of abilities having been reworked. It's still somewhat easy if you start on floor one, but they have added the ability to start on later floors to up the difficulty quite quickly. Testing is going forward.
Does it still have like a cap on the run?
So there is sort of a cap in that you can go, I believe it's 18 floors, 600. Right. Yeah.
Right. That's how it was when we went and did it. There was 18 floors and then it just kind of automatically booted you out and was like, hey, that's the end of your run.
Yeah. But what you can do is that you can, let's say this is live, and the first day you get into Torghast, you run and you get through your 18 floors on the endless corridors. You can then, or sorry, rather the twisting corridors, you can then on your second run start on the 19th floor and go from there, or start on the 7th floor or the 13th floor to attune your difficulty to what makes you comfortable. And then later on, as you get stronger and you come back, you can start on further and further floors and then keep pushing up into the higher reaches. You can just, in a single run, you can only go 18 floors.
Okay, so right? So there is still the cap on the number of floors you can do, which I think is probably a good thing, because when we did the 18 floor run, it was a few hours. So I feel like, and that was a few hours almost like one-shotting stuff, right? So I think it's probably good that they cap it, because otherwise that thing would just go on for 10,000 years.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, as we were talking about earlier in the alpha, people were doing like 3-4 hours to get up to floor 72, and that was ridiculous. But the big change to Torghast now is that the twisting corridors, the endless run that we were just talking about, is now the cosmetic mode. So you use that to unlock cosmetics and stuff. It is not for normal progression. Normal progression is going to be from one of the cell block runs. And cell block runs are going to be much shorter, much more random, right? And are going to be also randomized on the week. So you'll start one of these, you'll go through, this will get you your legendary materials and the stuff that you need for actual progression. And it'll be two of the six possible ones available that are going to be tightly themed, tightly set up for proper scaling. And you're going to do that as the core of Torghast. So you're never going to be doing one of these 18 floor runs if you don't like Torghast. You're going to have a much tighter, shorter, tuned run that you need to check off your list for Torghast. So even if Torghast becomes something that you don't like, it is not going to be something that's going to consume all your time. And I'm very happy that they're making that direct split.
Yeah, I'm really glad, especially after our experience a couple weeks ago. Now, granted that they have overhauled Torghast since we played, but even then, I feel like it's just a whole lot of trash, which doesn't really appeal to me. Now, again, alpha, things can change, things have changed, but I was really worried that it would be something that was going to take a lot of time, that was going to be like mandatory, air quotes, for me to progress through the Shadowlands content. I was really, really worried about that because, I mean, you guys know that I did not like Visions. And I thought this was like Visions on steroids, but also central to the entire expansion as opposed to one patch at the end. So I was really worried about Torghast, and the fact that they have made a kind of get in, get out mode that is the actual progression part, I think that's awesome. And then when I have time, I can take a look at Twisting Corridors and what cosmetics are available there. And I can, you know, like later on in the expansion, in downtimes and lulls, this will give me something to push again for cosmetics, which is better, I think. So this system seems like a vast improvement over what I played a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And then the last major change to Torghast is Torments. They have completely overhauled Torments, and in every way, shape, and form that they've made the changes, I think it's been a huge improvement. Torments no longer are something that is going to be a pseudo timer, where they will get stronger the longer that you're in a floor. They no longer are going to be detrimental to the player. They're instead going to be boosting creatures. And what it is that as you reach the higher floors, so in your first run where you're just doing, like, let's say six floors, you're never going to see a torment. But as you get into the higher floors, the torments will start stacking up. And it'll be stuff like enemies will do more magic damage, or enemies will do more physical damage, or other things like that. And it'll buff the enemies that you come across. And it's a new way of scaling it, Torghast, even further.
That sounds so much better, because there's one thing that I know I don't like, and I don't think a lot of the community likes, and that's with, like, when your character gets changed, your rotation gets, like, interrupted or slowed down or whatever in order to make things more difficult. It potentially takes away the fun of the class that you're playing at the most extreme, right? So by instead making enemies more difficult, even if it is just, you know, flat health buffs or damage buffs or whatever, but just making enemies more difficult might make you have to think outside the box in some way. Like, maybe you can't let that ability go uninterrupted anymore, or, you know, whatever the case is with all the different enemies you're going to face in Torghast. It's much better to make you try to think outside the box and use your utility than it is to just say, your haste is lowered by 15%, or you run real slow now. Like, that's not fun.
Yeah. And I think that's the way it should be, like, that they're actually going through. Again, the fact that they're not tied to time, like every 20 seconds, it gets a little additional stack, is also great. As much as they want to, I guess, obfuscate a timer is still a timer. It still has that same psychological effect, even if you can't exactly time it. And people are going to data mine it and say, okay, by the time it reaches five stacks, you're no longer able to get through any floor above this. And then it becomes a timer, because you're like, okay, I have 5 minutes to get to this floor or I'm screwed.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that they have rearranged it, and it's a much more fun environment where I feel that I can explore again, that I'm not going like, oh, if I don't kill the last boss by this, I'm so weak that I can't deal with him, or he's so strong that I can't deal with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving away from Torghast, the other small things that they've done is portals now in the Shadowlands don't have load times. You click through a portal, you're instantly in Bastion. You're instantly in Revendreth without having to go through a load screen.
And I wonder if that's something that they're going to implement through the entire game, or if it's just going to be Shadowlands specific.
When I was on the alpha, right now it's Shadowlands specific. If they are able to get that tech working perfectly and they spread it to the rest of the game, it would be awesome. Obviously, there's going to be some loading screens, like when you're going between BC content and then suddenly you jump over to Panda Land, there's going to be a load screen there. It's just too much of a jump. But if they streamline it like that,
if they could, like, somehow make it so that going back to your home city didn't have, like, so anyone who's going back to Stormwind or Orgrimmar doesn't have a load screen, and then maybe no load screens, like, within your expansion content would be really interesting. But I also understand that, like, if nobody chooses to level through WoD, which I do think you should level through WoD sometimes, because, you know, it was a pretty decent leveling experience. It was a terrible expansion after that, but the leveling experience itself was half decent.
The leveling experience in Warlords was the best leveling experience to date. I will actually have that fight.
I'm not fighting with you. That's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of people crap on WoD, but I think it did a pretty good job in leveling. It was good questing. So anyways, I do think that they should give WoD a chance, but, you know, it has a really bad rap. So I can see people, you know, shying away from it and, you know, having, say, Lich King have an insane load when it comes to new character levels, and then something like WoD not having anyone playing through it. And if that's the case, it seems like potentially no load screens, you know, ensuring no load screens in expansions that are underutilized for leveling might be detrimental to the game. Like, it might not actually be worth it. I don't know. That's probably something they can tell with numbers on the back end. But yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting because no load screens is definitely awesome. I am down for this. And I think that's pretty much it out of the new alpha build. There were a couple of other small changes, but you guys can go and check out some of the data mining and the Torghast update. We have links in the show notes. Again, you can find those at tgistudios.com/faz. That brings us to our community resources section. And this week, Manny, I'm going to tell you all about my bag add-on, Arc Inventory.
And as is tradition for the last 2 weeks, I'm going to crap all over it.
Aw. I haven't. Okay, well, maybe a little bit. On the first week anyways. Yeah, maybe a little bit. But so Arc Inventory is the one that I've been using for kind of years now. And the reason that I really, really like this, and I was definitely intrigued by the one you were talking about last week, Manny, because it sounds like the one you were talking about last week, and I'm totally blanking on the name of the actual add-on, but
ADI.
Right. It sounded like it kind of covered a lot of the bases of what Arc Inventory allows me to do, but it's automatically configured, because I think that the biggest detriment to Arc Inventory is also its like strength, is that there's a lot of individual configuration that you can do, but it's basically like writing macros for your bags, essentially. So it took me a very, very, very long time to set up, but now it works amazingly. So you can do things like create all your own, they're called rules in Arc Inventory, and you can then assign rules to filters basically that create like little mini bags within your bags. So it does the like one giant inventory screen, like instead of having, you know, the five different bag inventory screens that you're used to if you use the default UI. But then within that larger bag, there's like 40 potential smaller bags you can create, if that makes sense. So it's almost like being able to write the rules to like make your own leatherworking bag or mining bag from, again, default UI. And so right now what I've done is I've created rules like for when I was doing farming stuff. So I was taking like, then you can write rules for like names of items. So I was grabbing anything that was like part of the feast that we were using this tier, so I could go around when I was farming and I could see how many of all the ingredients and all the meals and all the feasts that were in my bags were all in one section. And then same with the herbs. I had like herbs from the current expansion in their own bag, separate from herbs that were like legacy, for lack of a better term, as well as things like gems and consumables and gear. And you can even change gear based on like if it's a BOE or if it's soulbound. Like, you can have a bag for each of those things, so it's very much like very, very customizable, but takes a lot of work to set up. And the kind of syntax of the coding and stuff, if you're not familiar with like, oh shoot, what's the language they use for add-ons now? I can't even remember. But yeah, if you're not familiar with it, it can be daunting at first. But there's also quite a lot of rules that are kind of posted online, and they have a pretty extensive list of examples, so you can kind of get the gist of it for a lot of basic rules when you're writing them.
Okay.
But yeah, but I should also say, because last week when we were talking about ADI bags, one of the things I think that the app developer had actually said was that they don't do things like figuring out Soulbound versus BOE because it takes a lot of resources. Arc Inventory is always my highest add-on in terms of, like, you know, when you hover over and it'll tell you like what add-ons are using how much memory. Arc Inventory is the highest by far. It's still at least I've never noticed it impact performance. But I can understand that if you had a less powerful PC that potentially you would see a hit to performance. So it's maybe not for everybody, but I absolutely love it. There's also like a filter for different storage locations. So again, like Manny, you were saying, you can view what's in your bank and stuff with a couple of the other add-ons you were talking about. Arc Inventory does the same thing. So you can view, you can't actually interact. So you can't like take stuff out of your bank without actually being there, but you can view your bank. And yeah, I really, really, really love this one. You kind of go in and after you've written all your rules, you do have to apply them to the one of the 40 bars, but what it's the kind of thing that once you have it set up, then it works really, really, really well.
Now for the rules, can you actually like set rules that are like sell off anything that is in this category and that sort of thing?
So I'm not 100% sure. Basically, when I go to a vendor, I have a slot in my bags, or like I have a filter applied to one of the, or a rule applied to a filter that kind of creates a junk bag. And then so I just click on all that stuff individually every time I go to a vendor. And I do that because I've disabled all of my auto selling, because I think LVUI will do it for you too. And a couple of the other add-ons that I use for various other functions in the game. I have lots of add-ons that I use for like one specific thing. And then, but they also have many, many other functions in the game. And I'm like, nah, you don't do that as well as I want you to. I just want you for this one thing. So there's a couple of different add-ons that I have that within their suite of things they do, one of the things they'll do is sell junk. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that. So I do think that you can actually like make it sell your junk automatically, but it's not a feature I use. So I don't want to say that 100%, but you can filter junk into one specific spot and then sell from there, which is what I do.
Okay. Yeah. I don't typically do that with my bag add-ons because of, what is my auction add-on? I'm blanking right now.
TSM.
Thank you. Because I can have that that functionality in TSM to sell stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So like I said, there's something. So like I use TSM for my auctions too. And TSM will also try to sell stuff. And yeah, so I just turn it all off so I can make the decision, which is kind of silly because in the end, I always end up selling anything that's filtered as junk anyway. But it makes me feel like I'm more in control. These little silly things.
Oh, it's not silly. I have horror shows where I've had to like go back and do item restores because I clicked the wrong button and it right. like vendored a bunch of things.
The other thing that you can do, which is really helpful for when you're actually creating your rules, is that you basically toggle your bags from like a live bag view to like an edit view. And when you're in the edit view, you can actually right click on anything that's already in your bag, like any item, and it will actually tell you the whole like categorization of your item. So it'll tell you like it's, I guess it's like a system tag. So it'll say like this is filed as like gear, Soulbound, like head slot, like, and all of those things can be used to create your rules. So you can kind of like create a rule for your gear for each of your filters that can kind of be as specific or as broad as you'd like it to be. So it's very, very helpful when you're in your edit mode to be able to kind of get that more in-depth item descriptions. So again, and this takes up a lot of memory, but it is the most thorough bag add-on that I've been able to find, and I have everything configured very specifically.
Okay.
It does mean I need to go through a huge configuration day at the beginning of every expansion and on the first day of every patch, because there's new items that I need to add or remove or whatever. So it's intense, but once you get it set up, it's just like, I don't have to think anymore. So you have one day of thinking and then a whole patch of,
Well, that leads me into my next question. Is there like any resources where you can get rules from somebody else? Like, let's say I've been on the alpha and I've already categorized all this stuff. You could then get the new items on day one, right, to like add to your rule set.
Well, yeah. So basically there is a wiki. So you can go there, and then obviously Reddit is always your friend as well. Well, I guess not always your friend. Maybe I should rephrase that. But there are a lot of helpful, friendly people on the internet. They're just mixed in with some people who maybe aren't. But yeah, there are definitely resources like that. But the other thing is, because you're creating all of your own rules, you can, like, if you were on the alpha and say there's some new herb called Feyweed, for sake of argument, you could go into your live Arc inventory rules and just create a rule that said, like, if name equals Feywood or Feyweed or whatever it is that I just said a couple seconds ago. And then basically your inventory is already set up, right? And then so when you log into the patch on the first day, like, those filters would have been empty. And whenever a filter is empty, or like you don't have anything in your bag that fits the rule, then it just disappears. Like, it doesn't use up like blank slots or anything. It just, if nothing matches that filter, it's just invisible. So you would essentially create a bunch of filters in the background that were just invisible. Or if, say, it's like for your herbs, you could just add it to your existing like BFA herbs, add all the names of the next expansion's herbs. And then when it comes to like 9.0 patch rollover day, then you could just delete all the BFA herbs from that rule and you're set, ready to go. So there's definitely some prep that you can do. Because like I say, if it doesn't find it, it just keeps it invisible. So.
Okay. Yeah, that seems awesome. It reminds me, like I said, of TSM, where I would like create my rules, and then from then on forward, it would be somewhat mindless. At least it's all set up for me.
Exactly. It is like very, very strong. It's very set it and forget it. But the set it part can take a lot of time. So. But yeah, I mean, I've got a bunch of links in the show notes to the wiki. And if you guys have any questions or anything else, hit me up in the Discord, because like I say, I've been using this pretty much since I started using add-ons. And I think I started using add-ons in late Pandaria, maybe early WoD. I didn't start using add-ons when I first started playing. Add-ons were so daunting. Now I can't imagine my WoW life without them.
So I got to ask you, what was your first add-on? What did you cut your teeth on?
That's a really good question. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was probably, I don't think it was Arc Inventory, though Inventory was definitely one of the things that, like, because basically what I did is I put it out on Twitter and I just like asked all my WoW friends and I was like, hey, what do you guys use? Because everyone keeps talking about add-ons. So it might have been DBM, actually, which is kind of interesting because I like wasn't even doing group content, but everyone's like, you have to have DBM. And I was like, okay. So yeah, I definitely had DBM. And then I tried a couple of different bag add-ons, but then did land on Arc Inventory. And then I want to say I had like Sexy Map or something that like put a like a skin around my mini map. Mm-hmm. There was no reason for it. It just made it look pretty and it sparkled.
Hey, I use Sexy Map today, so don't worry about it. They don't need to justify it, Joss. You stay strong with your Sexy Map.
Well, I don't use it anymore because eventually I was like, why? and yeah, so I think those are probably the main ones. There's some that I know a lot of people use that I don't. Like, I don't use TomTom or anything like that. like any of the coordinate add-ons really. Which was definitely a detriment to me in Nashtar because everyone was like, there's a rare at this place. And I was like, where is that? I don't know if I am close or far. I'm just going to fly around and look for stars. Except in Nashtar, I was walking. Let's be honest. I'm just going to walk around and look for stars and then see them die on my mini map.
8.2 was definitely when I got TomTom as well. So you and I are in the same boat where people were just like 7637. And I'm going to tell you guys that I actually know where that is on Nagitar without looking at the map because I had to deal with that sometimes.
You had that like right ready to go.
It's a crate drop and I needed my supply in the assassin. So I know.
Oh, man. But yeah, do you remember what your first add-on was?
So my first add-on would have had to have been DBM.
So just like me too, except for you probably actually needed it.
Well, because it was a requirement of the raid group that I was in. They're being like, yeah, well, you got to do that. My second add-on, which was like pretty much immediately followed, downloading on the same day, was DKP because you needed to get your points. And they actually had an add-on that tracked it for you. Before, I think it was like spreadsheets for DKP. But it's funny because I don't think I really use either of those add-ons as much as I used to. Obviously, DBM I use now because I'm raid leading and it helps to know when things are coming up so I can like actually stay to the raid. And of course, I'm talking to the choir here when I'm talking to Joss about like being able to say, hey, this ability is coming up. Maybe not. You don't want to be standing there.
I will say that my life in WoW has not actually changed that much moving from raid leading to healing because I'm still just staring at a tiny small spot on my screen that is not where my character is. It just went from DBM timers to my party frames or raid frames, I guess.
Yeah. For when I am not raid leading, I honestly could disable DBM.
Because you have me telling you what to do.
No, I wasn't. Well, one, yes, that definitely helped. But also, the bosses really telegraph a lot of their abilities. They have voice lines for specific things. So I think if you can deal with the information load, you could actually raid at a fairly high level without using DBM.
That's one thing that I would like to get better at, actually, because they have either like physical movements or they have in a lot of cases of a lot of the voice line. Sometimes it's voice lines, sometimes it's just audio triggers, but they very much have a lot of stuff built into the game now that if you're paying attention, it will tell you what the boss is going to do. So yeah, I can. Yeah, you could absolutely raid. You could raid lead even without DBM, but the timers are also helpful.
Yeah, I wouldn't say you could raid lead because
I think you could.
I think you have to tell people ahead of time. Like one of the great things, and if you guys ever watch Joss when she is raid leading and she streams, one of the great things that Joss does is she will say an ability coming up 5-10 seconds ahead of when the ability is coming up, so everybody is alert and looking for it. If you are doing that when the ability is going off, a lot of people on your team might be slow to react and get nailed by a buster cannon or not have their like dispel at the ready to like be ready to react. So DBM becomes far more important when you are raid leading, when you're trying to anticipate things and you're not just able to do the split second reactions. And if you are you have trouble with raid awareness or being able to react in that sort of speed, it helps as well. I think as a melee where all my abilities are pretty much instant, I don't have to react as well. But if I was dealing with long cast times, knowing ability is coming up and saying, well, I know it's not as strong as this, as an ability, but I can like get this ability in before I have to move, would also improve your DPS. So I think there's a lot of applications for using DBM. I just happen to be in the perfect storm where I can get away with it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. That was a tangent and a half. Sorry, guys. But yeah, so if you are interested in Arc Inventory, we've got, first of all, the link to the add-on itself, as well as I've linked the wiki and the frequently asked questions as well. So you guys can go and grab those links out of our show notes. That brings us to the email section today. We got a question in. You can either email at fazpodcast@gmail.com or you guys can hit us up on the Discord, which is what Fabio C did. And he says, now that BFA is over, what was the best thing about the expansion? Which is a bit of a spin on most of the BFA conversations that we have had over the past couple of years as we've been playing through the content. Manny, do you have a best thing?
What, you're gonna throw it to me? I gotta think on this.
Oh, poor BFA. I think for me, the best thing about this expansion was raiding, and more specifically the raid bosses. So there was a lot of trash that I found super annoying. There were a lot of like corridors and stuff, like areas of raids that I didn't like. But I think boss design and overall raid design was super interesting, really fun. There were a lot of mechanics that they experimented with. Some worked, some didn't. But at least they seem to be trying a lot of things. And as much as I hate it, it's probably my least favorite WoW boss of all time was the freaking Mechatork fight. But I think that it was interesting for them to try the whole get into the bots, push things. You know, you can only see if you're in a bot and you need your team to be actively communicating. Like, that was a really interesting decision and interesting mechanic for them to try. And I think that there was a lot of that in this expansion. I think the one thing where Legion fell a little bit short, especially in Tomb of Sargeras, is that the bosses felt like too much the same. Like there were too many mechanics that did fundamentally the same thing. And I didn't get that feeling in BFA. There were a lot of different things going on fight to fight, but they still all felt like they belonged together. There was a lot of really interesting story that was told. You had, you know, Mother even like following you through Aldir. Like there was a lot of really high points in this expansion in the raid, which makes me feel really bad for anyone who played through BFA that isn't a raider, because I think that that was definitely the highlight of the expansion for me.
Okay. So for me, I think that raids were right up there. But rather than to repeat what you said, I'm going to say war mode. I think that war mode throughout the course of BFA was something that they keep iterating on. And other than the against all odds controversy, I think war mode has been really fun. I love Call to Arms. Like those various areas that are flashpoints of PvP. I loved the faction assaults where when they were relevant and everybody was like flying into an area and be like, let's do this. I think they made for really fun and engaging content where I would lose so much time, where I would be doing one thing or another and then be like, oh, the war has completely broken out here, and then spend way more time than I needed, way beyond the like 10 or 25 kills that I was supposed to rack up, just going at it. And sometimes I would get slaughtered, and sometimes I would be the one doing the slaughtering, and I enjoyed it immensely. The one thing that I think that they need to change is the Onalist target. I think that maybe should be more punitive for you to kill somebody who's an Onalist target, because I remember people sitting around at the flight points waiting for somebody to come in and then jumping on them. I think that really needed to be curtailed.
Yeah, that's actually why, because I turned war mode back on in 8.2. I really enjoyed the PvP in Nazjatar, not so much in Mechagon, but I didn't spend very much time there in general. But in terms of Nazjatar, I really, really enjoyed it. And then so I had war mode on when we swapped over to 8.3 and we started doing all of the assaults. I was going to say invasions. Yeah. And I'm like, no, that's a different patch. All of the assaults. And they were very much like you'd get these big, huge groups of the opposing faction, basically like holding the daily quest givers hostage, which was really, really frustrating. So I ended up turning it off because, again, I wasn't as engaged with the content in 8.3 as I was in 8.2. So having my dailies kind of like slowed down by PvP was like, oh, I've already flown all over Uldum. I've spent so much time doing these stupid quests. All I want to do is turn them in and log off. And then it was just like, get killed, get killed, get killed, get killed. And I was like, fine, I'm not even going to turn them in then. I'm logging off. And so after the first week or so of 8.3, I turned off war mode and I haven't turned it back on again. But I can definitely agree, some of the most fun that I had early on in the expansion, especially before we knew like all of what was happening in BFA and Shadowlands from a larger story perspective, like when it very much felt like we were fresh off the back of, you know, the burning of Teldrassil and we were, you know, searching for new allies and we had the, you know, the big Talanji sinking the Alliance fleet thing. Like those were some really big, like, let's take it to the Alliance moments. And I'm sure on the Alliance side, it had some very big, like, oh, screw the Horde. We have to wipe them off at the face of the earth. Like, why is this happening? It definitely inflamed tensions on both sides, I think. And you're right. A lot of the PvP battles in those cases carried on long after rewards were gone. And it was one of the highlights of the expansion for sure.
So I hope that answers your question, Fabio. If people want to tell us what they thought the highlight of the expansion was for them, I would love to hear it. It honestly sometimes becomes like the smallest little things. Obviously, we have talked on and on about how we loved the Mage Tower in our last expansion, and Joss has talked about how she loved the Chromie scenario, which I still have yet to do, and I will get on that, I promise. And I think those little moments sometimes really make the difference because the hive mind for me is something that pops out in my head. And that was something I was going to mention.
Hive mind. What was hive mind?
Hive mind was the mount that you had to do with four other players.
Right, yeah.
And you could all jump within the same mount. And that was this expansion. And I was just like, yeah, that was really cool. And like, I remember that I would have to redo it to add additional people to the mount if I wasn't around the original five.
I never did get that mount.
Well, we should do that. That's definitely something we should do. I still have the monocle in my bag, so I can skip that step.
Okay. I don't even know what that means, but Manny, I'm glad you have a monocle. I'm sure you look spiffy. All right, guys, I think that's pretty much going to do it for the show this week. If you'd like to hit us up on Discord, then that is the best place to have chats with us that are very much like Fabio's question. So if that was a fun conversation, hit us up on Discord. Manny, where can folks find you on the internet?
So as always, I can be found on Twitter. That's TrueVillainManny, true without the E. You can also find me under the same title on Twitch, where I stream every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 Eastern and 6 Pacific. And of course, as you said, join us in the Discord where we're having conversations all the time, guys. And I really do love interacting with each of you. Joss, where can people find you around the interwebs?
You can follow me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. That's J-O-C-E Plays. You can also check out tgistudios.com/Faz if you're looking for our show notes. That's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening.
And until next time, guys, may all your hits be crits.